Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 157 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us after a strong, probably the strongest weekend of boxing, not just in the United States or the UK, but around the world. There was a ton of events and a ton of fights all over the world, which is not only great for the sport, but it's great for fans and it's great for the media and everybody who participates and is involved in the sport of boxing. But jumping right into our guest of the week, he returns. The last time he was here, it was during, well, I guess we're still kind of in the pandemic, but it was in the thick of the pandemic in the year 2020. He's an international agent, broker, and consultant with over 30 years of boxing, 30 years of career years, I guess, in the sport of boxing. He's also an inductee into the New York State Boxing Hall of Fame, and he's an elector for the International Boxing Hall of Fame as well. Rick Glaser returns to the Last Round here this week. Thank you again for joining us, Rick.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me. Michael, Danny, it's a pleasure to be on. Last year, when I was on, you guys had some great questions. I enjoyed myself immensely, and I was trying to figure out why you hadn't called me all this time, but here I am, and I'm happy to be here and proud to be here with you fine gentlemen.
Well, we appreciate it. As we mentioned just before we came on air, Rick, since you've been getting a lot of attention on boxing social media the last couple of days, we had some quite a few fans and listeners message us privately on social media accounts saying, "Hey, you know, can you guys get Rick on this week?" And we decided, well, hey, let's see if we'll message him. If we'll message him, if he's available, we'll get him on. So we appreciate you coming on, man.
Well, when do I give you my Cash App number? Now or after the show? I'm kidding.
Hey, man, if the listeners, if they wanted to hear from your side, man. So you know.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
No, we got
fire
you.
Fire away.
We got
fire
you.
Away, Danny.
We
fire
got
away.
You. So before we get into you know, obviously why everybody is probably tuning in to listen to your take on, you know, the whole pay-per-view scene, especially in as it relates to Gervonta Tank Davis and, you know, PBC and his recent fight with Isaac Cruz. And obviously you're back and forth with the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, Leonard Ellerbe. We're going to touch on some fights as we typically do here every week here on the Last Round. Like this past Saturday, the 11th of December, from the Coca-Cola Arena in Dubai, Sonny Edwards gets the unanimous decision win over Jason Mama. This was for the IBF flyweight title. Did you catch this fight, Rick? And if you did, what did you think about Sonny Edwards' victory?
I love watching Sonny Edwards fight. He reminds me so much of Paul Spadafora. He's slick. You know, he's smart. He's great on his feet. He's got fast hands. And I'm not saying he's exciting as far as, you know, the fighting part, but he's so slick and smart. He's exciting for a guy who's a purist. And he's every bit of purist, as far as a fighter goes. Love watching him. I've watched a bunch of his fights. And love watching the guy, and I'm looking forward to fighting him again. That Jay Mama that he fought, young man from the Philippines, was undefeated going in. He definitely warned being the mandatory number one contender. He was a solid guy. And you know what? He may be eventually world champion if Sonny Edwards eventually moves up to 115. I could see this guy be – this guy is a real solid game competitor. And he gave 100% of himself. It just wasn't enough to beat Sonny Edwards. Sonny Edwards is too fast on his feet for the guys he's fighting. Way, way too fast on his feet. I mean, he's really smart. Very impressive win by Sonny Edwards.
So you were a fan of this matchup even before it actually happened, Rick?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I knew about both fighters. I knew the other guy would give it his all. The other guy could bang a little bit. And but Sonny Edwards is just too smart. You know, he's what I call ring brilliant. His ring IQ is very, very high, you know. And he's everything I knew he was going in, and the other guy was everything I knew he was going in. He'd be a step behind All Might, and he was. That's all what it amounted to. He was a step behind All Might.
Do you think that Sonny Edwards is arguably the number one in the flyweight division, number one ranked?
I would say he is, because I don't think anybody, any of the other present champions, can beat him. You know, don't get me wrong, somebody get clipped on the chin, you know, not see a punch coming, but he's just so sharp, you know what I mean? He's just one of those type of guys. He's very, very sharp fighter. And I'm very impressed with him. How could you not be?
And as for Jason Mama, so you think that as long as Sonny Edwards or guys like Sonny Edwards are still within the flyweight division, you don't think Jason Mama is going to be able to get a title?
No. Well, I don't think he won't beat Sonny Edwards. Sonny Edwards beat him 10 out of 10 times just because of the fact that his style is so difficult to conquer. I mean, you remember something. There's two Sonny Edwards. There's the smart Sonny Edwards who can box his ass off with fast feet. And then there's a Sonny Edwards when he wants to rumble, he can rumble. And he's good at both. He's a great, great boxer. Great pure boxer.
Mike, what do you think about Sonny Edwards' win and performance?
I thought it was a good performance from Sonny. Like Rick said, even though he doesn't have, you know, that knockout type of style, he's still exciting to watch. He still makes boxing from the outside kind of interesting to watch. Just with the style that he has, he's always like a bull and a matador type of fight when you watch Sonny. Rick, what would you think of Sonny Edwards against the Julio Cesar Martinez?
You know what? About 15 people asked me about that fight. You know, I think there's going to be that fight will happen because there'll be great interest being flyweights, and they both command TV. You know, and Julio Cesar Martinez is on the streaming. What do I think? I really believe that Edwards has a really good chance to win that fight. As good as Julio Cesar Martinez is, his style is going to be. Listen, that's going to be Pernell Whitaker and Julio Cesar Chavez all over again. Is really what it is, you know. And you saw what happened there. Mm-hmm. So this is the same type of fight. This guy's smart. This guy knows how to fight. I mean, he does things that you can't teach a fighter. It's natural instinct. And that's a very hard guy to beat. He's a natural born fighter. You can see it. I mean, there's no question about it, you know? So I have a very high opinion of him because I know what guys like Paul Spadafore, Pernell Whitaker, those kind of slick, cagey boxers are capable of doing. And I know that Martinez is like a walk-in guy, like a Julio Cesar Chavez was before him. And you saw how that played out. And this could play out the same way.
Also on the card, Rick, Donnie Nietes, the hard-nosed veteran in the sport of boxing, fights to a split draw with Norberto Jimenez. This was for the WBO International Super Flyweight title. What would you think about this matchup, Rick? And what's your take on Nietes?
It was an excellent fight, good action fight. Enjoyed it a lot. I didn't like the decision because I really thought. The Filipino Nietes did enough to win more rounds, and he was a smarter boxer. The other guy was, you know, he wasn't that good, and I thought it was very poorly scored. I don't mean it was a robbery, but I had him winning 6-4, okay, and I thought that was the right score. So I didn't think they had the right score, but. You know, it's just one man's opinion, mine. So what can I say?
As a fan, would you want to see a rematch between these two since it was a split draw?
What was the weight of the fight? 112?
Super flyweight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 115?
Right.
Would I want to see it again? I don't think we need to see it again. I think Nietes ought to move forward into something more important than that. I think he's capable of doing that. Rick, know, especially being 39 years old.
Rick, what did you think of this was Probellum's first card. What did you think of the setup and how it was, and what do you know about the people behind Probellum?
The fights themselves were good, except that I was hearing that guy from the Netherlands, De Bruin, was supposed to be so good, and he's awful. But the fights were good. I liked the fights a lot. The Sonny Edwards fight, the Netes fight, overall the fights were good. You know, the heavyweight score in the first round, one punch knockouts, always exciting being a heavyweight. I thought the fights were very good. I thought the production was bad. They didn't have a replay. The announcers screwed up on the 10 and 12 rounds on the Netes fight. The production was not good as far as no replay. And there was a bunch of things wrong technically. The announcers were not too swift. I mean, the announcers were pretty pathetic. You want to know the truth. You know, announcers make a big mistake today. If you go back to old fights, the announcers used to say that the broadcast used to say, he hit, okay, Jones hit Williams with a left and another left and now a right. Today, they're talking to each other and not paying attention to the action. People want to watch boxing. They don't want to listen to the announcers. Okay, they don't get it. They're there to explain the action, not talk about bullshit. Well, they're throwing punches at each other. Well, he's rated number 7. He's not rated. What the fuck? Shut up and what? Call the fights. That's why you're there. You know what I mean? And they lose all context of why they're there. And they're all doing it today. If you pay attention to the zone, they're just as bad. ESPN guys, they're bad. They all do that. And years ago, and when I say years ago, listen, I'm 63. I'm not talking about 80 years ago. I'm talking about 25 years ago, 20 years ago. And these guys don't call the fights anymore. They don't tell you what you're supposed to. Now, I don't need anybody to tell me what I'm seeing. I know what I'm seeing. I'm a professional. But what about the layman? The consummate consumer sitting at home, he needs somebody to describe the action to him. Okay, most people do, and these guys are talking and talking and talking for what? Describe the action, and they don't do it. And that turns me off. And then listen, Mark Kriegel's on ESPN, he's good, but enough with these stories. People want to watch boxing; they don't want to listen to Mark Kriegel. Come on, stop with the father's stories and the hard luck stories. All boxing is hard luck. If things were so great, they wouldn't become fighters. Okay? I mean, they get hit in the head to make a living. I mean, I respect that. I respect fighters. But we all know they have hard backgrounds. Well, they wouldn't be. How many? Name me a fighter that came from an upper, a middle class or upper middle class background. Okay, I can only name one off the top of my head. Marco Antonio Barrera. Both his parents are attorneys. That's the only one. Think about that. You know, either they don't know their father. They did know their father. They come from, you know, somebody's an alcoholic. Somebody's a drug addict. You know, somebody beat somebody up. Dysfunction. It's part of it. I get it. But what is all these stories? It's all stories. We don't need to hear this over and over again about every fighter. The fighters should be embarrassed. I mean, you should get embarrassed over this stuff. You know, I mean, bringing up all these things that happen in your family life, but, you know, stick to the fucking boxing part.
And how far do you think Probellum can go, Rick, especially with such established promoters like Top Rank, you know, Golden Boy, Matchroom, PBC?
That's a great question. I think that they're starting out well. They got a show. They just had the show in Dubai. They got a show in England. Was it this week?
Yeah, they have one this weekend in the northeast of England.
Yeah, right. They got one come. I don't even know who's fighting, but I know they got a show. I think they'll do fine. You know, I don't see a reason why they're not going to do fine. You know, they've got a lot of brain trust involved. I mean, they got Mike Altamira in Australia. They got Sam Jones in England. They got Anthony Cantazzaro in the United States. They're sort of spread out all over the place, and they've hired some intelligent people, some good boxing guys, some good boxing minds. So, you know, let's give them an opportunity. Let's revisit it in 3 years from now and see where they are. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, we'll see. It's in its infancy stages, and everything looks good so far. They're signing some quality fighters. They're starting to do shows just a couple months after they announced they were opening up for business. And, you know, I don't know what the name means. I mean, Pro Bellum, I'm not sure what it means, but, you know, or what connotation it has. But it is what it is. So, hey, if they put on good fights, they pay the people they're supposed to pay, the worker, you know, the executives, and they pay the fighters properly, and they pay people, the vendors. So, you know, garner a good reputation. You know, let's see in 3 years. I hope they make it. You know, so far so good.
How do you think any of the negative attention that they've been getting in terms of the allegations in regards to, you know, being associated with MTK Global or Daniel Kinahan?
I've talked. People have asked me about Daniel Kinahan for a long time. And I just defended him with this Irish, these two Irish journalists, on Twitter, and then in a Zoom taping and stuff like that. And I defended this man. First of all, he's never been arrested. It's a lot of allegations. It's all hearsay. Nobody's proved anything in a court of law. And in the United States, we are innocent until proven guilty. And they're making him sound like he's guilty till proven innocent. That's the first thing. Okay. The second thing is that every single fighter that he's been involved with, okay, has publicly came out in his defense, from the heavyweight champion of the world. Okay, Tyson Fury, Billy Joe Saunders, Josh Taylor, the list goes on and on. Okay, and everybody can't be wrong. There's truth in quantity. Okay, and he's seems to be doing a great job in professional boxing. Whether he's rumored to be with MTK, he's rumored not to be with MTK anymore. I don't know, all these rumors and all this stuff, but I just know one thing, that everything he touches seems to turn to gold, number one. Number two is, as long as he doesn't commit crimes against boxing, in other words, do stupid, like Heyman's done, all this crazy shit that Heyman's done, I don't have a problem with Daniel Kinahan being in boxing at all. Okay, he brings a lot to the table. Why are we having shows in Dubai, supposedly? Supposedly, Daniel Kinahan, I don't know that to be the truth. But you know what? If he's making the arrangements with the government, with the arena, with the promoters, great. It's great for boxing. It's another outlet, and I don't see what the big deal is. I think the Irish journalists and law enforcement are making the big deal out of this, bigger than it really is. I think fight fans are just happy there's another outlet to watch fights. And quality fights, and have, you know, push, you know, make things happen behind the scenes and push things along. And he's obviously a great negotiator. Oh, you know, and this is all happening now. So I don't have a problem with MTK. I don't have a problem with Daniel Kinahan. I don't have a problem with Pro Bellum. If he's involved with Pro Bellum or not, I don't know. If he's still involved with MTK or he's not, it doesn't matter. All I know is everything they do, they put on beautiful club shows at Lee Eaton over, not club show, I'm sorry, the domestic shows. I'm sorry. Beautiful domestic shows, some eliminators on there and stuff like that, you know, world eliminators on there. And I don't have a negative word to say, you know. I mean, like I said, as long as he's doing nice things for boxing, let it keep happening. You know, I hate this terminology they use about this man called sports washing. Well, obviously he loves boxing, and he obviously knows about it. So that's not sports washing to me. sports watching is going to buy a NASCAR team and not knowing anything about it and clean up your image from something else. That's not the case here. He knows about boxing. He knows boxing, obviously. So there's my answer. You guys have any questions about this? Because there's a lot of things we can talk about, but if you want to stay on the subject, I'd be glad to answer the questions.
Well, I mean, I do see, I guess, your point, like what we had talked about in past episodes, when, especially when American fighters like Terrence Crawford and mm-hmm. JoJo Diaz and I think one or two of Robert Garcia's guys.
Virgil Ortiz and Joshua Franco. Yep.
Right. When they started joining with MTK, I mean, I know we don't necessarily know if he's involved with them, but there is reports that he was, you know, I'm not entirely sure what's going on there, but you know, and then we see all these reports of, I mean, cause I've seen at least on Twitter from certain accounts that I guess follow his career dealings, I guess, you know, that I've seen legal briefings, you know, as far back as 2009, I think I saw recently from the United States, that his name popped up. So, I mean, do you think that this is ever going to catch up to him? I mean, because his name is...
Hold on. Now you're getting the legalities here about something I don't know anything about. You went from talking about boxing, my expertise, to talking about legal. I'm not a lawyer. So, I mean, by the way, I'm not scolding you.
Do
I think it'll catch up with him? There's no extradition agreement from Dubai, as that I know of. And I think as long as he stays there, he stays there. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, all I know is that everybody that's dealt with this guy, from Bob Arum, Tyson Fury, nobody said a negative word about this guy. Okay? Nobody. Okay, and including Bob Arum. Listen, if this guy was no fucking good, Bob Arum would tell you. Trust me, he's like I am. Okay, he'll let you know with both barrels. He said nothing but great things about this guy. I mean, you can't. What's the word? I don't see what he's done wrong. You know, and you know, people say to me, "Well, I'm not in Ireland. I'm not in the streets of Dublin. I don't get it." I get it. Okay. But until somebody shows me, you know, this might be sins of his father. You know that storyline, sins of my father. Okay, because his father was supposedly involved in that business. He's still alive, so maybe you know supposedly, but who knows? I don't know. But all I know is one thing: he's doing great things for boxing. He's in Dubai. He's not in Ireland. He's not in the UK, and a lot of great things are happening in boxing thanks to this guy, whether he arranged it, promoted it, set it up, whether he influenced the situation. All I know is good shit is happening and people are making money and getting paid. And he's not overpaying anybody in the sense that this quote money laundering, sports washing, all bullshit. Everybody's just getting paid fairly. That's all. Nobody's getting overcompensated. It's just all good, fair dealings. Okay?
All right. Moving on. Also this past weekend from the Echo Arena in Liverpool on the Zone, Conor Benn remains undefeated with the fourth round KO over Chris Algieri. This was for the WBA Continental Welterweight title. What'd you think about this matchup, Rick?
It was a very good matchup in the sense of one guy was coming up and one guy's going down. It was a great crossroads fight. One guy in the back nine, a great knockout. Conor Benn's improving greatly every fight. Literally every fight he's improving greatly. His instincts are getting much better. Okay, he's more instinctual now than he was two or three fights ago. Much more. I don't mean just a little bit, like 5%. I mean like leaps and bounds every single time he's impressing me. And he's a very good fighter. I think he's going to be better than Cal Brook, and I think he's going to be a much bigger draw than Cal Brook.
Oh wow, that's a pretty big statement, Rick.
I think very highly of the young man. He's got a nice personality. I've listened to him. He's pleasant. Listen, I have a line. I have a line that I use literally daily. Okay. And it's about men, women, fighters. It's about everybody and everything. Okay. Here's my line. There's no negativity associated with this young man. He's got personality. He's nice looking. He can fight. He can punch. He trains hard from what I understand. He talks well. I don't see any negativity, and he's improving. So there's your answer right there. You can't beat all that, can you?
I guess not. Mike last week thought that Chris Algieri probably was too much for him. Right, Mike?
I thought going into it that just Ben was still learning kind of like on the job, and I thought Algieri had a chance of old manning him. You know, just kind of like hit and move.
Algieri's 140 pounder.
Yeah.
The fight was in 47. He was too small, too inactive on the back nine, heading towards the clubhouse. And it was perfect timing. I knew that thing. I told everybody this is not even going to be any big deal as far as the fight goes.
Do you think Conor Benn is either going to reach the levels his father did or surpass them?
That's a hard question because I remember.
Or not reach him at all.
Yeah, I he's going to be a world champion. He'll be at that level. No question about it. He'll definitely be at that level. I'm very confident of that.
Do you think he'll pick up a world title, though, Rick, with like Virgil Ortiz, Jerron Ennis? Obviously, it's just the fact that he's in a very, very hard division.
First of all, Jerron Ennis is going to win a title at welterweight and move up to junior middleweight relatively quickly. And with four belts today, I would be very surprised if he doesn't become a world champ and defend his title a bunch of times.
Right. Right, yeah. Either way, it's an exciting division, especially with these young guys kind of coming into their own. Also on the card, for the undisputed lightweight world titles, WBC, WBA, IBF, and WBO, Katie Taylor retains her titles with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Firuza Sharapova. What'd you think about Katie Taylor's win, Rick?
There was too much boxing on Saturday. I didn't watch her fight. There was other fights on other stages. I don't really comment on women's boxing. It's not my thing.
It's never been your thing?
No, nor will ever be my thing.
Mike, what do you think about Katie Taylor's performance? I mean, are we going to see the Amanda Serrano fight?
I think we'll still see the Amanda Serrano fight, but I think Katie Taylor's best days might be behind her. I don't know whether it's due to the fact of maybe Sharapova wasn't a big name and she just got in the ring and, you know, wasn't overly concerned by it. Maybe she needs that bit of, you know, the chance that she feels she could lose, you know, to bring out the best in her. Or is it she's just kind of getting old now? I think there's the Amanda Serrano fight probably needs to happen now for her, because I thought in the last couple of fights she hasn't looked as good as she was. Stands in the pocket a lot more than she used to. You know, she's really gone away from the amateur style. Now she kind of just tries to get in there and just kind of like plant her feet and starts throwing. You could see that when she fought Delphine Persoon, when she, she probably lost the first fight because that's what she did. And then in the second fight, she'd boxed a little bit more. But at times now, I find that she just stands in the pocket and, you know, fights instead of boxes. I think the Serrano fight probably needs to happen now.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Especially with Serrano being aligned and promoted, I guess, essentially by Jake Paul and his team. So I'm sure that's going to definitely elevate that matchup. Also, this past weekend from the Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California, out here in the Los Angeles County area in Southern California, Nonito Donaire gets the fourth round KO over Raymark Gabayo. Donaire retains his WBC bantamweight title. What'd you think about this matchup, Rick, and Donaire's win?
Well, I saw it. It was a singular body shot. He's like, you know, all these Filipino fighters seem to get a lot of mileage out of themselves. Pacquiao winning fights in his early 40s. Donnie Nettes, I thought one that won the other day, just didn't get the decision. This guy's 39-2. I mean, there's something about these guys. They're just, you know, they seem to have, an extra gear in their life, you know. And you know, one guy's in his early 40s beating Thurman. You know, one guy's 39 and competitive, Nettes, and now this guy's a world champion at 39. They're all little guys, but they're, you know, the Philippines, there must be something in the water over there that's successful in their genes, because they seem to be doing pretty good to me.
It kind of like books the trend, right, Rick? Because most of the time you listen to people talk about the lower weight categories, they say that they retire earlier because they've got to try and keep making weight and stuff like that. Yeah, it's completely different, isn't it?
That's my point. You know, all these Filipinos seem to get a lot of mileage out of themselves, every one of them. I mean, it's sort of amazing, but they are. And, you know, I don't know what it's just, geez, I don't know what they're doing, but they're doing something good. So they all look pretty good to me.
Rick, do you think if Donaire, obviously he wants the Inoue rematch, do you think that belongs in Japan?
Yeah, why not? You know, no reason why it shouldn't be okay. We got to look and check this COVID situation out. And I don't know if Inoue wants the rematch or not, because he's got, you know, he's got a lot of options. He can go to 22. He can do everything he wants because, you know, he's got American TV, Japanese TV. I mean, he's got a lot of money. You know, he makes a lot of money per fight, way, way, way more than Donaire does, you know. So, you know, he's got options, put it that way to you. But I think the same result in the rematch. I just can't see Donaire beating. He might be the fountain of youth, but not when he gets in with Inoue. Inoue can really fight. And away, Inoue, whatever. Right. Same guy. The same guy can fight real well.
Right. But I mean, that's arguably the biggest money fight for both of them at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, you know, absolutely 100%. I mean, there's nothing bigger than those two fighting. So, yeah, I would definitely 100%. Just like if for the 112, Julio Cesar Martinez and Sonny Edwards, that would be a big fight, you know, in comparison to, you know, that would be the biggest fight in that weight class. You know, it's super flyweight. I don't know who would be the biggest fight. Probably Chocolatito and Estrada. Probably I would say still. So you know, those are all big money fights for little guys. You know, for the little guys of the sport, and they can all fight and they all make fun fights. And you know, we're excited to see all of them fight. You know, it's just the way it is. You know,
right. Also, this past weekend from Madison Square Garden in New York City on ESPN and ESPN Plus, Vasily Lomachenko gets the 12-round unanimous decision win over Richard Comey. This was for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Lightweight title. Rick, is Lomachenko? What do you think about his performance? One, and is he back in the mix to be the best lightweight at 135 pounds?
He's the best lightweight. Period. Right now, even though he doesn't have the title, remember something. Everybody says, well, he lost to Lopez, Teofimo, but Teofimo's going 140 now. So you got to throw his name out of the mix now and say, hey, this guy's probably the best fighter. I don't see the other guys beating. This guy's too smart. This guy's quick, agile, okay? A lot of mobility. I mean, that the one twist that he does where he's standing in front of you, then you turn around and he smacks you twice. That's beautiful. That's shit a legend, you know, legendary stuff. And he's just a great fighter, period. I mean, I don't, you know, so what, he lost two fights. So what, he lost two fights. Every time out, he fights a gorilla animal and a tiger. Come on now. You know, look what he's fighting. Top guys every time out. He wants to challenge himself. And you got to respect that.
Rick, in all your years in boxing, and especially how many fights you've seen, not just on TV, but in person, just because Lomachenko, during this fight against Richard Comey, there was one point during the later rounds, I believe, mid to late rounds, where
he signaled the referee, the corner, everything else. I saw that three times before. Okay. Larry Holmes did it with Ali. Larry Holmes did it with Marvis Frazier. Okay. And I'm trying to think of what the other fight was. I was telling the guy the other day, I saw it three times. But it was Larry Holmes twice with Ali and Marvis Frazier. And there was another time I saw it too, and I'm trying to think who it was, but something similar to that. Okay. And yeah, I mean, you know, the fight could have been stopped at any moment there and nobody would have complained. So it was a little bit of a weird situation, to say the least, that he kept. And then he kept telling the corner, the referee wouldn't stop. He kept telling the corner to stop. He felt sorry for the guy. Richard Cotton, he's very, very well liked by everybody that knows him. And he's a real nice guy. He doesn't talk any shit. And he was getting the shit beat out of him, you know. And it wasn't a matter of he could have knocked him out. It's just that the damage was mounting. It was what the point was. It wasn't saying, well, see, he didn't knock him out. Well, that wasn't the idea. The idea was he's taking so much punishment, more than he should be, and he wasn't going to win the fight. He wasn't going to win the fight on the scorecards, and he wasn't going to win the fight by knockout. So, you know, he's just saying, stop this thing. That's what it was all about.
Rick, who gives Lomachenko his most competitive fight at 135?
Probably Tank Davis, because he's left-handed and he's quick himself and short himself. And I think Tank Davis does, because he can punch Tank, and he's quick, short, and he's also also left-handed. I think that Devin Haney is too fundamental. In other words, he's too easy to figure out. He does everything perfectly well. And that's not the kind of guy that's going to beat Lomachenko. It's the guy that does weird shit, that throws weird shit at weird times and weird angles, and that's what Tank does. So I think Tank has the best shot of beating him.
Is Tank Davis behind Lomachenko in your personal rankings? Is he number two at 135?
Yeah, I would say he is. Yep, for sure.
Do you think this is why so many of the bigger names in the lightweight division started calling out George Kambosos after he beat Lopez? Do they look at him like he's not maybe
They look at him as the weak link, because he got lucky. They feel he got lucky because they look at the Lee Selby fight, and he looked like he didn't look good. He barely won that fight with Lee Selby. And Lee Selby is just a guy. And, you know, they look at him as being the weak link in the division.
So can you see Lomachenko possibly getting all the belts back and being undisputed once again?
I can see Lomachenko fighting Kambosos and winning. Yes, definitely. He's very hard to fight. He's like a Sonny Edwards. He's slick. He's smart. He's quick. He's left-handed. He's a brilliant fighter. There's no negativity associated with Loma. And you got to love how he fights and his ingenuity in there. He's just brilliant.
Also on that card, Rick, Jared Anderson remains undefeated at 11-0 with the second round TKO over Oleksandr Teslenko. What did you think about Jared Anderson's win?
I thought the win was great. I thought the knockout was great. Teslenko was a really good amateur. He had one loss in his pro career, and he's a legitimate fighter, and he destroyed him with one punch. The problem I have with Jared Anderson was that costume he wore in the ring. It's not something you wear in the ring and duplicating a pimp, including the cane. It's, you know, we're on national TV. There's young people watching. There's women watching. And I thought that was very disrespectful and way, 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 way out of bad taste.
Also this past weekend from Russia, Dmitry Bivol retained his WBA light heavyweight title with a 12-round unanimous decision win over Umar Salamov. What do you think about Bivol's performance, Rick?
He's going backwards. He's lost his power. He's lost his snap and his punches, his zest. And his speed isn't there. And he's definitely on the back nine. I think a combination of all the pro fights and a million amateur fights, and I think he's on the back nine. He's very ripe for the taking. I would make Zordo Ramirez a favor over him, to be honest with you. He's sharp left-hander. He's tall, rangy. And Bivol's just fighting guys, and he's not doing well with just guys. I mean, this guy's not supposed to go the distance with him. I mean, come on. I mean, he looks terrible. He's slow. He's not, well, he's not slow. He's slower than, He's slower than he used to be. He used to be pretty quick. He's slower. He's potting now. His legs are too far apart. He's more, he pushes his punches at times. He just doesn't look inspired, and he really looks like he's on the back nine, to be honest with you.
So you think, do you think it's likely that we see in the following matchup, assuming Zurdo Ramirez wins his fight as well, do we see them maybe sometime next year?
Well, here's the deal. Zurdo Ramirez is supposed to be an eliminator coming up, I don't know, against two, and then the winner is supposed to play Beeble. Beeble won't fight him right now, so he'll have to be a mandatory to fight it. But the good thing is Beeble's only got one title, so if he gives it up, he's no longer a champ, and that's his calling card. It's not like he's got two titles. He can just give it up, give one of them up. So he needs that belt. So I hope we see it at the end of, by the end of next year. I really do. It's a fight that must be made. You know, I mean, Zorro's like 41 or 42-0. The other guy's undefeated. And I just think it's a fight that should happen. And I'm, you know, Beeble just looks uninspiring in there. I mean, there's no zest to his game. There's no oomph. You know what I mean? I mean, like if you got a steak and you want to add a little oomph to it, you take the A1 sauce and you take a little of the Frank's hot sauce, the Tabasco, you mix it up, right? You put it on your steak, and oh, wow, woof. There was no woof to this guy the other day. And he just looks like he's on the downhill slide, to be honest with you.
So who would be the lead promoter in that matchup, that potential matchup, Golden Boy or Matchroom?
Well, probably Matchroom because they have the champ, and Eddie's got a bigger influence, obviously, with the zone than Oscar does. So he would be the lead promoter, Eddie would. But it would be, Golden Boy would have a few guys on the show. They'd probably have a co-feature where their guys fought each other. And there's one guy, Oscar fighter, maybe two fights with Top Rank did with the Fury 3, Fury and the Wilder 3, something like that, where their guys fight each other, you know?
Right. Fight previews this upcoming Friday, the 17th of December, from the Bell Center in Montreal, Canada. Artur Beterbiev defends his WBC and IBF light heavyweight titles against Marcus Brown. What do you think about this matchup, Rick?
Well, they're both on the back nine. Beterbiev, since he had the COVID, he doesn't look good. He didn't look good against Dines when he fought Dines. He can't pivot well. He can't back up anymore. And his legs are a lot way worse than they were, even though his punching power is still there. And the rest of them are still there. His legs aren't what they were. You can see that. And Brown, he's way on the back nine. He doesn't have a good chin. He is left-handed, but the experience, Beterbiev had so many amateur fights that being left-handed would just be another day in the park for him. So I expect him to win by knockout.
Do you think there's any, I guess, I don't want to say truth, but there's any seriousness to a potential clash between Canelo and Beterbiev?
Of course, there have to be. You know, Canelo's up for challenges. I honestly believe that fight could very well happen. I don't see why it couldn't happen. Let's put it that way to you. You know, whoever Canelo fights is going to be a big fight and attraction and stuff. He's the hottest guy in boxing. He's the biggest money maker in boxing presently, followed closely by Tyson Fury and Joshua. I think that basically speaking is that I think that very well can happen, especially if Beterbiev wins and doesn't look good against Brown. Now, you can win and still not look good. So if he wins and doesn't look good, you can count that fight in sometime in 2022.
Right. This upcoming Saturday, the 18th of December, from the Manchester Arena in Manchester, on DAZN, Joseph Parker, 29-2, goes up against Derek Chisora, 32-11, in a rematch. Rick, is this rematch warranted? Should we see it again?
No, we don't need to see this fight again. I mean, seriously, two old wore-out guys. You know, one guy was a fringe contender at best, one guy was world champion for a day. sold his title to Joshua. I don't need to see this fight. I'm going to watch. I'm gonna, you know, what else am I supposed to do with my life but watch boxing? You know what I'm saying? So you remember something, guys. I never had any kids. I didn't marry until I was 55. I don't have any, you know, dysfunctional people in my family, like nephews that I got to watch or pay attention to. They're all good citizens. They all got good jobs. You know, my one nephew is the University of San Francisco Division I basketball team. He's the assistant coach. They're 10-0. You know what I mean? So, you know, my nephew is a prison guard. The other one owns his own business. He's what they call a dent doctor. You know what that is? They take the dents out of the cars. Mm-hmm. So you don't do any paint work. You just beat them out. He owns his own business. He's making a lot of money with that. You know, I got a whole bunch of successful, you know, relatives, if you know what I'm saying, where I don't have to watch over them. So I got nothing else to do but watch boxing. You know what I mean? I mean, make my wife happy, you know, and watch boxing. This is what I do. And I get paid for my opinions, except from you guys, of course.
Hey, man, you should have had your representation reach out to us before you said yes.
No. I would, you guys, I would do this for free. I enjoyed last year's version. I enjoyed 2020's version. I enjoyed 2021's version. But, you know, I don't want to be, over a year apart. Jesus. Like 15, 60 months apart. Come on, guys.
We'll try better in the trilogy of your.
Thank you.
Also this weekend, even though some of our listeners don't like us talking about these, from Tampa, Florida on Showtime pay-per-view, another pay-per-view, Jake Paul, the YouTuber, rematches Tyrone Woodley. What's your take on these social media fights, Rick?
I don't like them at all. It's disgusting. There's too much attention paid to him by people that think that's professional boxing, and it's not. These YouTubers are fighting MMA guys. These YouTubers are fighting football and basketball players. Come on, guys. And he's talking about fighting Canelo. Canelo hit this guy once in the body, 3 seconds into the fight, and it's over. It'd be the biggest ripoff in American history. Come on now. Bigger than Mike Tyson and Peter McNeely. You know, August 20th, 1995. Come on now.
You never know. Crazier things have happened, Rick. You never know.
Come on, guys. You know, this it's garbage. That's not real fighting. Come on now.
Also on the card, which is actually a real fight between females, Amanda Serrano goes up against Miriam Gutierrez. I'm assuming if Serrano wins, since her and Katie Taylor are fighting within pretty much the same week of each other, they're both on the same timeline. So hopefully we see that sometime next year. News and notes section as we start going towards the juicy part of this interview, why everybody tuned in to listen to Rick Glaser this week. Amir Khan and Kell Brook has been announced for February 19th, and it has reportedly sold out in under 10 minutes. What's your take on that, Rick?
Well, it depends what happens. Either which gives out first, Amir Khan's chin or Kell Brook's face.
What do you think?
One of them has to give out first. Which one is it? I don't know.
So, but people are still interested. I mean, it's obviously
you all, because there are two mega personalities who are both at the top of the game at one time. But this is 10 years past its expiration date. I mean, you know, at least 8 years past. Come on. I mean, you know, listen, I can't be mad at this boxer promoter, Ben, whatever his name is. I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. But I can't be mad at him because he's an upstart promoter trying to make it big. And I respect that. Okay. And congratulations to him that he got both these guys to fight each other finally. It's something Eddie Hearn could never do. So this guy came along, got these two guys to fight, but Eddie Hearn could never get him to fight. So that's interesting in itself. But if Eddie Hearn was doing the show, I would be all over it because he's got better content to put on than this. So I would be all over Eddie if he tried to make two guys that shouldn't be fighting anymore. I'm going to give the Ben Boxer there, Boxer, Ben, whatever you want to call him, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because he's an upstart promoter and I understand what he's trying to do. Okay, he's now Frank Warren challenging Jarvis Astaire and Mickey Duff is what this amounts to. okay, where he was an upstart guy and stuff. Well, the same thing's happening here. This guy versus Hearn and Frank Warren. So I get that. And I don't have a problem with it because he's trying. But in reality, if Hearn was doing this, I'd have, not because I don't like Eddie, okay, or anything like that, or just like, okay, but Eddie could put out a lot better product than this. So I, you know, I'm not going to abuse the product, but if Eddie was, I admittedly I would, because he could put on so much better fights with the same dollars. And that's how I feel.
And then it was also recently reported that Keith Thurman is returning after almost a 30-month layoff on January 29th against Mario Barrios. And it reported another Showtime, or it might be a Fox pay-per-view, actually. What's your take on
it's
Keith
Thurman?
It's
not a pay-per-view fight, and I'm predicting Mario Barrios scores an upset victory.
Oh, wow, really?
Yep, I'll tell you why. Mario Barrios was killing himself to make 140 pounds. He couldn't do it anymore. And he's going to be much bigger and stronger. I don't mean bigger in the sense that bigger as in like physically bigger, but he'll be bigger in his own mind and confidence to and be physically stronger, use his legs. And I think he's going to beat Keith Thurman, who's been so inactive. And I'm looking for an upset in that fight.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to see if you're right on that, Rick. And then moment of truth here for why everybody's probably been listening to this week's episode of The Last Round with Rick Glaser. Rick, you recently put out on your Twitter handle, Real Rick
Glaser. Recently was yesterday. Keep going.
Recently was yesterday. So this week, depending on when people listen to this, that the Tank Davis Isak Cruz event did somewhere in the neighborhood of the 50,000 buys range. And you've been getting a lot of slack, at least from Leonard Ellerbe, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions. Can you give us your take on this whole situation and what's going on here?
Well, I feel that Floyd Mayweather, Leonard, in no particular order now, Floyd Mayweather, Leonard Ellerbe, Al Haymon, and Steven Espinosa Showtime all did this kid a misdeed here. They erred greatly and badly. First of all, the fight was not a pay-per-view fight, and this was a replacement fight, Isak Cruz, but nor was Rolly Romero. Okay? And that's the first thing. Now, if they're going to put it on pay-per-view, okay, that's their business model. I respect that part. But I don't respect the fact that I told everybody on Twitter going forward and on all kinds of podcasts that it was going to be a doomed failure going against NFL football on a Sunday night, especially with Patrick Mahomes, one of the best quarterbacks, one of the three best quarterbacks in the league right now. You know, Tom Brady himself and Josh Allen are probably the three top quarterbacks in the league. And in the meantime, you're going to charge $75 to go against free NFL football. Not only is it football in America, Sunday Night Football in America, okay? Not only is it NBC, you know, free. Not only is it free, but you got Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs, one of the most popular, best quarterbacks, and one of the most popular teams of the league, a traditional team that came in 1960. They didn't come in. And they didn't come in, you know, 15 years ago like Carolina or Jacksonville, where you don't have that heritage. They got heritage. And you just don't do these things. And they set themselves up for failure and for gloom and doom. And that's what they did. Okay? And it's not the lack of popularity with the fighter. It's America is going to watch a free football event before they'll pay $75 for boxing. And let me just tell you something, and I mean this sincerely. Okay, you guys are not NASCAR fans. You guys are not Indianapolis 500 car fans. And I'm sure, Michael, you being from the UK, you've seen a Formula One race. Mm-hmm. But if you put any of those sports on free TV against a boxing match featuring Tank Davis, okay? By accident, you're going to lose 30 to 40% of your customers just because one's free and one's $75. Now, if he would have been fighting Lomachenko, Devin Haney, you know, Teofimo, something like that, you know, okay, they still would have lost a big portion of their crowd. Now, just to give you an idea, Rolly Romero was probably a 10% loss in pay-per-view buys. So instead of doing low 50s, I'm sorry, 20%. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. 20% of their pay-per-view buys, just because it would have been a more credible fight. Okay, in homes instead of 50, low 50s, or maybe in, or instead of low 60s. Big deal. You cannot put fights on pay-per-view that do not warrant pay-per-view and go against, and also go against Sunday night, any kind of football game that's an NFL game or a huge college game. You just can't do it. It's impossible. Okay? It's absolutely impossible. I was talking to somebody years ago, okay, that was an executive at a TV network. I was having dinner with him by accident. I was with he was a retired executive, but a TV consultant. I was having dinner with him with Don King, and in New York, and I said to the guy, "How much does these other sporting events affect the pay per view?" He says, "There's no telling, but when you're talking about free compared to pay, it's a huge difference. Who's going to spend $75 to watch Tank Davis unless you're a degenerate Frank Tank Davis fan and you don't care about the football game? You're cutting your own, you're cutting your own throat. I mean, it's like putting sand, it's like putting sand in your car, putting sand in there, dirt. You're cutting yourself off. And that, you know, it's not, you know, Leonard thinks that this big battle on Twitter and all this BS, it's no battle. Just come clean and said, you know, it's not lack of Tank's popularity. Myself, Floyd, Heyman, whoever he wants to blame, Espinoza, but come clean and say, we made a mistake. We made a mistake and went up against NFL football. Okay? Now, that's what he should do. Okay, but no, he wants to fight and say, I'm a liar. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm full of shit. You know, please. I mean, I can call what the pay-per-view numbers, if I know what events are that night, what the undercard is, you know, everything about it. I can call a pay-per-view within 5% of what they do, what they're going to do. Okay, and furthermore, okay, I'm getting the results after from a attorney, LA-based attorney that's in the TV industry since the Mayweather-Gaddy fight in what, July of 2004, I believe it was. Okay, I've been getting the numbers from the same guy, and the guy's accurate as heck. Matter of fact, people at Top Rank in Don King's office said, "Where do you get your information? It's spot on." People have said that to me over the years. Okay, I know what I'm doing. I got great sources. Leonard's not going to bullshit me. He tries to make me look like I'm some casual fan on the internet, like some jerk off. Please stop already. I've been doing this for 31 years in January. The two things I've never been accused of being, one of them is stupidity. Nobody's ever accused me of being stupid. Okay, and I resent anybody that even thinks I don't know, because it's outright insulting. I've been doing this too long, do this full time. I make a living at it. I never got a salary in my life, and all I do is keep pumping out business year in, month, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, decade in, and now we're 31 years into the business, and he's trying to take credibility away from me. No, live up to your mistake. You don't go against mega sporting events, especially NFL football in America. Now, Michael, you're from the UK. Could you imagine putting out a boxing pay-per-view when England and Italy are going in soccer? Could you imagine this happening?
No, exactly. That's why, like, in the UK, they'll do the boxing event after, try and catch the same audience.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you very much. Okay? And that's what he tried to do. Okay? It's ridiculous. It's something you don't do. It shows you how out of touch those four guys are. Heyman, Mayweather, Ellerbe, and Espinoza. They're out of touch. Why would you go up against it? It makes no sense at all. None. Makes no sense. Another thing is, why would you have your main event at the East Coast come in the ring at 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever what the friggin' time it was? People have to work the next day. So now you got to buy an audience who's pissed off at you. I mean, you can't do that. You can't do that. Now, when they did the other pay-per-view with Barros, they did relatively well. He lied about the numbers, of course, but that's not the point. It still did relatively well. And because Barros, why? Because it wasn't against NFL football. It was just a regular night. And that's what you got to go on. You can't go ask the people to pay $75 competing. All Leonard would have to do is everybody go out and make a statement on the internet, go to the websites, you know, go to have their publicists go, listen, okay, we made a mistake. Okay, we're not waiting from how we feel about taking his popularity. We screwed up. Okay, as executives, we screwed up. We said we thought it would do well despite it, and it didn't. You know, Patrick Mahomes, NFL football, NBC, Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs, we made a mistake. No, he wants to lie about it and then call me that I'm full of shit. I'm not full of shit, and everybody knows I'm not full of shit, except Leonard wants to tell people that. It's ridiculous. It's a funny thing. The other day, I looked at my thing. Leonard followed me on Twitter, and I followed him back. He followed me. If you go to the people I'm following, which is 124 people, 123 are following me. They're all boxing, Hall of Famers, executives, you know, Gordon Hall from Showtime, or Rich Bruce Trampler. The only one that doesn't follow me is a corporate account, Top Ranks corporate account, but everybody works there follows me. Okay? And, you know, Oscar De La Hoya followed me. You know, I didn't follow him. He followed me. Then I followed him back. I don't follow anybody. You got to follow me first. I'm not chasing. I'm too old for the chase. Okay? I chased my wife. That was a while back now. That was 2012 and 13, and I'm still chasing. I'm kidding you. So I caught her. I caught up with her finally. But anyways, the truth of the matter is Leonard made a mistake. Live up to it. I've made mistakes, okay? I've lived up to every mistake I ever did. I pled guilty. I got indicted for racketeering back in 1989. I pled guilty. Anytime I've made a mistake, I've lived up to it, okay? Every single time. I've made mistakes in my life. I live up to them. Live up to it. That's all he has to do. All he had to do is come on and say, hey, we made a mistake. I made a mistake. We went against NFL football. We're not detouring from our game plan with Tank. This is not Tank's fault. He's a popular fighter. He's a great fighter. He's this. He's that. That's great. But don't come out and slam me for telling the truth. I mean, when you were wrong for doing the best, I told everybody it was going to be a failure. You can't do that. So, gentlemen, fire away. Well, you know, who's coming first with the questions, Mike or Danny?
Rick, so Steven Espinoza responded. I don't think he responded to you. He responded to somebody else.
Who was the digital buys being 100,000?
Correct. Yeah, what's your take on bullshit. That?
It's all bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's all deflection and everything else. It's just deflection. It's all lies and deflection. It did in the low 50s, okay? Okay, my guy told me it did between 52 and 53,000, and I go by that. Okay, he's never steered me wrong. And by the way, just to let you know about my 5% theory, okay, it was a little wrong because I thought it would do 60,000 homes going up against NFL football. So, okay, I was wrong by over 10%. Which is highly unusual for me, but I knew it wouldn't be but 60,000 homes. When I figured it out in my mind what it was going to do. So, you know, what's the funny part about it is it was a no-brainer it was going to do bad, but they didn't see it because they're not in reality. I'm in reality. I watch football. I watch college football, pro football. I watch NASCAR. I watch Indy cars. I watch hockey. The only thing I don't watch is NBA. And I love baseball. It's one of my favorite. Baseball, you know, except for boxing and NASCAR is my favorite. I watch dirt track sprint car racing and the midget racing from California. Okay? I mean, I watch everything. The only thing I don't watch is NBA basketball. I love college basketball. I don't like NBA basketball. But I'm in reality. I know what it is like going up against free national sporting events when you have the words NBC Sunday Night NFL Football and it's free. I know what it means to America. Fire away, guys. Fire away. Come on now.
Rick, with Showtime being essentially under the umbrella of a public company being owned by Viacom, I believe. Don't you think that Steven Espinosa reporting, even though he's tweeting it?
That's, well, that I shut him down on that years ago when I was on Twitter the first time. Then I got hacked into. But he was reporting crazy numbers on the Mayweather fight that didn't, Mayweather fights that didn't exist. And I reminded him that corporate fraud is 20% or more of overstating the income public, overstating business and revenues publicly. And then he shut it down and kept his mouth shut after that. I buried him on Twitter, buried him. I don't know if you guys remember that at all.
You don't think this time, I mean, since he's saying
listen. He can't help himself. Look at the argument he got with Paulie Malignaggi in public at one of the fights. Mm-hmm. Then he tried to put the camera, shove the camera back on the guy's face. You guys saw that video. Yeah. Okay. I mean, what are you doing? You know, like he's a big shot. The guy's a mouse amongst men. Okay. He's lucky Paulie did slap him around. You know, I mean, he is what he is. You know, I mean, I've heard him called everything from the weasel, the rat, to Heyman's lackey, and you know, all kinds of shit. He is what he is.
So, Leonard, obviously, throughout the day today, you and Leonard have essentially been going back and forth on Twitter.
Yeah, and I got over 300 new followers. Yep, that's true.
And then earlier today, we're recording this on obviously on a Tuesday night here. He had responded to you and he said, quote, again, with all the respected people in the boxing biz, from lawyers, boxing writers, managers, promoters, to executives that I have ever come in contact with, all have told me publicly and privately, you're a lying piece of shit. And I agree. I'll leave it at that. End quote. What's your response to that statement?
It's crazy. I got one of the best reputations in the world. That's why I'm able to do business without a salary and do business with people all over the world on a handshake, phone calls, and emails. I don't have to even have contracts with people. You know, I have contracts with certain people, but as a general rule, I have a fantastic reputation. Absolutely fantastic. Are there some people I despise and don't like? Me, yes. Steven Espinosa, Lou DiBella, Al Heyman. But those reasons are obvious. As a general rule, people in boxing like me. I do too much business, not to be liked and respected. Then that, you know, okay, at least the word respected. How's that? So he's full of shit, is what it amounts to. So but you guys do that anyway. You guys do that anyway. If you thought I was full of shit, you wouldn't have me on your show. Keep going.
Well, I mean, we'd be happy to have Leonard Ellerbe on here as well to respond to you. I mean, you know,
listen,
why not?
Listen. All I know is I'm an elector at the Hall of Fame. If I was all those things that Leonard claimed negative, do you think the Hall of Fame would have me as an elector? Do you think that I would have been a unanimous selection for the New York State Boxing Hall of Fame where every single guy voted for me? I'll tell you a great story that just happened, okay? So Freeway Rick Ross and I got connected up. You know, guys know who Freeway Rick Ross is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So we got connected up. I'm helping him get his boxing thing off the ground, and we're actually signing up a bunch of fighters. We'll probably have it announced next week. But basically speaking, what really happened was that he checked me out. When he was told about me, he checked me out. And when we sat down, he said to me, he says, Rick, you got the highest compliment that I ever heard about anybody in my entire life. I says, what's that? He goes, the guy said, he says, I hate the bastard, but he's brilliant. That's all you need to know. I'm not running a popularity. You run a popularity contest in boxing, you'll go bankrupt. Okay? You got to be a little bit of a prick at times. And you got to have those detractors like Leonard Ellerby. Because if you don't, oh, Rick's a nice guy. Rick's a nice guy. I don't want to hear I'm a nice guy. I deliver. Okay, I'm a man of action every day. This is what I do. I was put on this earth to make deals, to broker deals, render advice for a fee, and treat people properly like they deserve to be treated. I actually like Leonard. Okay, Leonard's defending his product and his mistake is what he's doing. Okay, and if you lived up to his mistake, you wouldn't have to defend his product because, to be honest with you, the product wasn't that bad. It was a good fight. It was a very good undercard, but you go against NFL football, you're sticking it to yourself. You're punching yourself in the stomach, what you're doing.
Rick, has there ever been a time when you reported on pay-per-view numbers for an event and they were essentially inaccurate in maybe the weeks or months following? Like something came out that was additional?
No, because the guy I'm getting this stuff from is right from the correct that. Numbers that I thought going into the event have been wrong, like my 5% rule, I've been wrong a couple times on that. Don't get me wrong. Okay. But after the fact, the numbers that I'm getting are very accurate. I mean, Don King has told me so. Bob Arum's employees have told me so over the years. You know, Bob got mad at me because I reported on I don't know what a fight it was, and he was about to it was a Wilder fight. He was about to make Wilder and Fury about a low number because he's trying to drum up business. But the truth of the matter was, my numbers are very accurate. They're coming from an attorney who's in that business every day, so he knows. He deals with all the figure networks, everybody. He represents a lot of different people in that business, you know, that are coming and going all the time in and out of those companies, you know, employment contracts, executive contract, golden parachute, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's got the inside track on a lot of good stuff. I mean, he tells me stuff that's going to happen weeks down the road. You know, this is going to happen, you know, you'll see, blah, blah, blah. And I'll look and wait for it, you know, to happen. And he's not giving me secrets away because these are not clients of his. It's just stuff he's getting about, you know, he's not talking about his own clients. So it's nothing unethical he's doing.
Rick, in terms of other entities or people who report pay-per-view numbers, primarily, you know, reporters and writers, how accurate are they?
I'll stop you there. Those numbers are getting floated to them by the promoter or the TV network executive. And they're not accurate because they're inflating them. Okay. They're absolutely inflating them. And it's like Canelo, they reported that 850,000 homes.
That was one of them. Yeah.
It was 747 and actually did. They didn't lie about that craziness. They don't, you know, they only lied by 103,000 or something like that. You know, nothing really crazy, you know, but enough to tilt it, look like it was a successful event. It was successful to a certain point, but it didn't do those kind of numbers.
So Rick, why should people trust your numbers for pay-per-view events and not anybody else's, like Mike Coppinger, maybe Kevin Ioli?
Well, because those numbers are getting floated to them by the TV executive. If the numbers were so accurate and so good, the TV networks would put them out themselves. They used to do it at HBO when Mark Taffet was there, okay? But these guys are getting floated numbers. Listen, I really like Mike Coppinger. I really like Kevin Ioli. They're classy guys. They're quality people. I can honestly say Mike Coppinger is fun to be around. I enjoy them both immensely, okay? They're both professional reporters. They're both excellent reporters, but they're getting their numbers floated to them by these promoters, and they're taking them as earnest, and they should take it as earnest because they're the TV executives and promoters aren't supposed to be lying about about pay-per-view. I'll tell you a story that happened not too long ago, and I was financially involved as an advisor to the manager of the fighter. So I can't tell you who the fighter is, okay? Please respect my business, okay? So a fighter fought on a pay-per-view show as a main event, and he was supposed to get, okay, $3 a home over 200,000 home. Oh, I'm sorry, over 100,000 homes, $3 a home. So they reported the thing did some crazy number when I knew it didn't. And then the kid reads it in the thing and he thinks he's getting this big bonus, you know, of you know, this big wacky bonus of like $120,000. And then they get the financial. I told the manager, you better slow that kid down because he's going to be greatly disappointed. They found out it completely bit the bullet. Okay, where it barely broke the threshold of the 100,000. Okay, but he thought he did 102,000. He thought he was going to get this big pie in the sky. Didn't work out that way. I told the guys, there's no way it did that kind of number. We're sure they had the certified accounting report, and it did 102,000. Okay, here's another example. Okay. Charlo and the two Charlos did that last September, a year ago, did that doubleheader. One fought Dovinchenko, and I can't remember who the other one fought off the top of my head. Okay, but whatever. 77,000 buys on pay-per-view. A complete flop. They're reporting hundreds of thousands, and, you know, 298,000. 77,000. Okay, now, the question was posed to me yesterday, maybe it was today, well, does my number count? Because Steven Espinosa mentioned the digital buys. So the guy asked me on the internet today on Twitter, he says, does your number count? I said, my number is all consumer purchases through cable, satellite, and streaming. That's brought in by Showtime, that's brought in by Fox, brought in by ESPN. Okay, there's your answer right there. Okay, all consumer. Now, it doesn't count commercial distribution, which is the bar network, which does not count as pay-per-view. That's commercial distribution. So, come on, guys. You're slowing down on me. Rick, still got 21 minutes to go. Come on, guys.
Rick, what do you say to the people who criticize you in terms of saying that you're a top-ranked fan, that you don't like PBC or Al Heyman?
No. Hold on. I don't make any bones about that. I don't give a shit what anybody thinks. I'm entitled to my opinion. Okay, all I know is Al Heyman got millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions, blew it up in 30 months, puts on a shit product, okay, has 275 fighters. You know this thing with Al Heyman? Oh, thank you, Al. Thank you, Al Heyman. There's 30 fighters staying there. What about the 240 of them that are disgruntled? Okay? They all sign their license away. When they went to Heyman, that they can't badmouth Heyman. If not, they can get sued and put on the bench and seize their purses and everything else. Come on, it's all bullshit. Top Rank is a class or what? Why do you think every single Olympian, every single male Olympian just signed with Top Rank for the Olympic team? Did you guys know that?
We did, yes.
Yeah. Well, they didn't go to Golden. And I love Oscar. He does a good job. They didn't go to Al Heyman. They didn't go to anybody but Bob Arum. Every one of them, and including some of the alternates. And Jared Anderson went two and a half years ago instead of going to the Olympics. They got and you know what? They say Bob Arum's a racist and Top Rank's no place for a black fighter. Every one of them is black. Well, what's going on here, guys? Are we missing something here? Let's just tell the truth. Let's not, I don't mean you guys, but these people just dream shit up. Bob Arum's this, Bob Arum's had a lot of fighters that have been black over the years. Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns, Floyd Mayweather, Stevie Johnson. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. George Foreman. I mean, come on. You know, where do they come up with this stuff from? Why? Because they have a lot of Mexican-based fighters because they're on the West Coast. And Bob's got a lot of money coming in from Hispanic TV markets, like in Mexico, Central America, and South America. That's why he uses a lot of Hispanic fighters, because he gets a lot of TV revenue from them, because they have their own fan base in other countries. So that's just the way it is. And, you know, they can say what they want. Okay, I know is that every single time the Top Rank has owed me money over the years, it's like a slot machine. This is how good they are. Okay, this is how good they are. So I made a fight for them on a Saturday. And Tuesday, I get a phone call. Rick, we want to apologize to you. We didn't send your check out yesterday. It's going out today. They called me to apologize. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, this is a class organization. This is a class. They invited me and my wife to Vegas. When was it? Oh, God, not last year. 2019, when we had the pandemic after that. Right, like 2000. They invited my wife out there. I was out there on Bob's Dime for 5 days. Okay, me and my wife flew me out there. And not because I did anything for them, just because I get treated respect. Every time I dealt with Al Heyman years ago with the Vernon Ford situation, Lou DiBella, please, that's a horror. It was a horror story. Okay, these are class people that treat people with dignity and respect. That's all I know.
Rick, one listener actually messaged us too when people were messaging us about you coming on, especially after this whole pay-per-view talk, and they he'd like to know what your issue is with Dan Rafael, since you've tweeted about him quite a bit.
Okay, well, here, I'll give you three stories real quick. Okay, real quick, three stories. So, and I had a problem with ESPN and Russell Peltz in the year 2000. Literally, Russell stole a fighter from me that I had signed under contract. And Russell signed them, gave him a signing bonus, and the guy was the number one contender in the world. So this one reporter found out about it through an associate of my, Mike Geekery, who was a promoter at the time. He now passed away earlier this year in January. And he went and called the FBI up, because Peltz was the advisor to ESPN at the time, and he used his power at ESPN. The fighter told me himself said, if you lose this fight to Paul Spadafore for the world title and you're not with me, you're not going to get on TV over Glazer. With me, you'll get right back on TV. Of course, he was right back on TV. So anyways, in the meantime, is that reporter called the FBI. I got a knock on my door one day. It's the FBI. Okay, fine. Okay, how can I help you? And he says, well, we'd like to take your records from you. We don't have a warrant. Don't make us get a warrant. We want to, your records, anything concerning Russell Peltz and Billy Irwin, who's the name of the fighter, okay, was the number one contender. And then, and anything to do with Mike Akery, we would like to see any paperwork you have, any faxes, and anything going on, you know, emails, whatever. Okay, I gave him all the paperwork. You know, it was about 4 inches deep. Gave it to him. And, they said, okay, don't say anything to anybody. Leave it alone. Bop, 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 bop. I said, no problem. Next thing I know is Mike Akery, okay, he tells somebody. Somebody tells Rafael. Rafael's calling me and asking me, you know, pop. I said, Dan, leave. Dan was working at USA TV at the time, USA Network at the time, I'm sorry. Not USA Network, USA Today, the newspaper. I'm sorry, the newspaper, right, getting me all confused. I said, yeah, Dan, what's up? He goes, oh, you know, I said, leave it alone. Please leave it alone. Okay, I won't do anything, but you'll let me know what's going on. Oh, Dan, absolutely. He calls up the Buffalo office of the FBI, okay, and try and finds out who the FBI agent, because he told them he's got information leading to the case that it would help them. Get that one. He gets on the phone and starts interrogating the FBI agent. How do I find out? He gets off the phone. The FBI calls me and says, what'd you do? Hire a publicist? Okay, that was the first thing he did. Then Billy Irwin's going to fight Juan Diaz. It was maybe going to be on HBO. He was friends with Kerry Davis at the time, who was real tight with Kerry Davis. And he knew it was my fighter, and we were supposed to get, like, you know, big money, like $200,000 to fight Juan Diaz, who was a WBA undefeated champ at the time. And Bill, we were supposed to get like $200,000. And it ends up to be an ESPN only, and we got to take $85,000. Cost me and the fighter $115,000. Okay? You want, now, would you like me to continue? Are these just two stories good enough for you guys?
Continue.
I'll go to one third one. Okay. So back in like 2013, 14, whatever year it was, I put out a thing to everybody in boxing and on Facebook that Richard Schaefer and Oscar De La Hoya were fighting. This was like in February of that year. Okay. February or March. I think it was March. They're fighting, pop, 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 pop. So, and I told other people, they're fighting. Okay, I didn't reveal my source. They're fighting, like cats and dogs. So, he tells everybody that he interviewed Richard and he interviewed Oscar, and both of them say I'm full of shit and that everything's hunky-dory with those two. Okay? Well, in June, the first Monday in June, they broke up. It was like June 2nd or 3rd. They split up. Big thing. Oscar sued him for millions of dollars. He won $40 million in the outer court settlement and everything. And Heyman paid it out of that thing because he was about to get sued out of that money from Whiteout Reed. Okay? How did I know that they were fighting is the big question, right? Why do you want to know how the big question is? Okay. So we have a restaurant here called Dandelions. And there was a guy, there was a golf course right next door. And this Bernie used to play golf next door when, you know, like this is like the 19th hole. They come next door and they win a cup. So he loves boxing, this Bernie. He's now passed away. And old Bernie, he was a good guy, played golf, nice guy, good family man. So he says to me, listen, do you have a card? I said, yeah. He said, well, I want to stay home and watch boxing, but I don't mind buying a pay-per-view, but I got to know it's good, and I don't know enough about it to say it's going to be good or not. Obviously, you do. No problem. Here's my card. So he called me a couple times, okay, and, you know, asked me, should I buy this? Yes, stay home and buy it. It's worth the money, okay, if it's not a good fight. Because, kid, I owe you dinner at Dandelions. No problem, Rick. We really appreciate it. Well, I get a call from him one day. And he says, Rick, do you know a guy named Richard Schaefer? I says, of course I do. He says, well, do you know Oscar De La Hoya, right? Of course I do. I know, you know, of him, you know, he knows who I am. He says, they're fighting like cats and dogs. Did you know that? I says, no. How do you know? He says, well, my daughter works at a restaurant in L.A. and she's a waitress there. And they're always yelling and screaming at each other on the cell phone. He said, well, how do you know it's Oscar? She says, he keeps saying Oscar, Oscar. Okay? So I says, can you get her on the phone? He says, yeah, give me a minute and I'll call you back on the phone. Hopefully I can get a hold of her. Calls me back. I'm talking to her. And I says, well, how do you know that he's telling the bartender all his problems when he gets off the phone with Oscar? He says, I live with the bartender. He's my boyfriend.
Oh.
Okay, I said, matter of fact, he says, we're probably going to get married. So, you know how a guy talks on the phone and then, you know how a guy comes up to the bar and then the bartender becomes his best friend after 5 minutes. You know how it goes. Every bartender, you know the deal. Okay, well, that's what was happening. And they heard him yelling at each other, blah, blah, blah. I'm full of Glazer's full of shit. He don't know. Then a guy went on his chat. Okay. And the guy was a friend of mine. And he says, Rick Glazer, he's not even really in boxing. He just says he is. So he tells the guy. Okay. I mean, it's nuts. And the guy knew better. I got him free tickets to a whole bunch of fights. You know, good fights too. Madison Square Garden, Atlantic City, you know, bigger fights. Okay. So that was one. Now here's the last one. Okay. So a couple years ago, I found out that ESPN was not renewing Dan Raphael's contract. You know about this story?
I think we've seen it, but go ahead and say it again for people who don't know.
Okay. Well, you may not know the whole story. So I get a call from my connection, okay? And he says to me, he says, Rick, he says, Rafael's not getting his – by the way, this guy's not in boxing. He's a lawyer, too. But this guy's New York City-based. He says to me, he says, Rick, remember, if you go look at my website, you'll see I have a lot of lawyers that are clients of mine. So make a long story short, he says to me, he says, Rafael is not getting fired. He's not getting his contract renewed. I says, are you positive? He says, Rick, I'm absolutely positive. I says, how do you know this? I says, well, corporate, but I know what's even about. He says, his immediate boss hates him. She don't want no part of him. And she's a woman. And believe me, women are ruling the roost these days in those kind of positions. I says, okay, I got it. So Rafael announces that hold on. So Rafael announces that his chat room is no longer because the software was out of date. Now, could you imagine $150 billion, okay, corporate world business as ESPN, Disney, and I might be light at $150 billion. Senior boxing writer's chat was no longer. Why? Because the software went out. Please, guys, it was the start of things to come. Okay, that's what happened. Then I announced it. I actually announced it publicly. Okay, and he told everybody I was crazy. I didn't know what I was talking about. I was full of shit. I'm not really in boxing. You know, he started with all his shit, except for the people that really knew I was in boxing. Then he was just telling them Glazer's full of shit. Okay. Well, he had 8 months between when I announced that, and 8 months to when he left the job, when they cut him loose. Okay, that they didn't renew the contract to find the job. 8 months. Now, he actually found out from me because he didn't know he was getting cut loose. His agent told Nick Khan, kept telling him that, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm getting this done. I knew before all they did. So he found out from me. Okay? So he's pissed off, okay, at me. He charged all this shit, and he loses out. Here's a guy that worked at ESPN. Making all his money, this big plateau. You think somebody would have hired him for a salary job, except being a stringer at Boxing Scene for $100 an article? Come on. He never found a job in 8 months, and he never found a real job since then. He started his own little shtick now, and you know, by the seat of his pants and by his balls. And you know what? He tormented me for 20 years. Okay, I don't mean torment me that I was, you know, that he upset me, but he attempted to torment my business for 20 years, and you know what? I won. That's all I know. Okay, he's a scum. Okay, he's a disgusting person. Okay, you remember when the chairs broke, when he sat in the chair at the fight down in Dallas and the chair broke? Okay, I mean, come on now. I mean, that's never happened in the history of boxing until Rafael came along. So now you guys know some of the reasons why I despise the guy. Now, am I supposed to hate the guy or supposed to like him? You guys tell me.
Well, we can't really tell you how to think, right, Rick? I mean, you've had your life and your career.
The point is, how would you feel if he tried to do all those things to you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, from what you're telling us, I mean, it if it's all true, which we're assuming it is.
Yeah. It's all true. Okay. I got too many witnesses to say it's true. So we got 5 more minutes, guys.
One final question before we let you go here, Rick. Sure. I mean, obviously, we appreciate your valuable time here on the last round.
I appreciate being here tonight. I just don't want to make this a once a year occurrence.
We won't, especially after this. We definitely won't. Okay. So, you know, we're talking about the reporters in the boxing game, you know, there's not too many like out there that are, you know, at big, you know, I guess credible and reputable agencies or companies. Who's your go-to reputable reporters that you trust?
Well, the guy who I trust the most, because he knows the most about the business of boxing, not just the sport. Most of them know the sport. Some of them don't have any clue about the business. The guy that most knows about the business by far, it's not even a contest, is Steve Kim. He could be entrepreneurial in the boxing business as a promoter if he wanted to be. He's that kind of guy. He knows boxing. He really does. I have nothing but high regard. You'll never, ever in my life have me ever say something negative about his knowledge of the game or his integrity. I think he's very bright, and he's a guy that I admire for his brains, and he loves boxing, and he understands it. Ray Fiel, he don't know a thing about the business. He only knows about the sport. Coppinger has a good idea about the business. He's on his ways. Don't forget, he's a young guy. He's only like 34 years older. He's not that old. So he's learning about the business part of it. But as far as the knowledge of the business, Steve Kim blows everybody away. But Coppinger's on his way uphill too. Okay? I got a lot of respect for Mike. I love his ingenuity. I love his aggressiveness. And I like him as a person. And Steve Kim, he's great. And I think his mind has got a great boxing mind. Really good. I'm very impressed with him. Okay? Kevin Ioli, he reports on the sport. And MMA. You remember something. It's hard to be divided. And Kevin's heavily vested in MMA because of the Yahoo deal today. So, you know how it goes. But he's a sharp guy, too, overall. But Steve, when it comes to the business, Steve Kim knows the business. Steve Kim could work for a promoter and help any promoter. He's a sharp guy. Very good personality. Knows his shit.
On that note, Rick, obviously, once again, we keep repeating it, but we appreciate you coming on. And as we cross the finish line here of this week's episode of The Last Round, go ahead, Rick, and, I guess promote your Twitter handle and anywhere else people can find and follow you.
There's a lot of fake parody accounts out there with my name on it, but here's what it is. It's at Real Rick Glaser 1, the numeral 1. And Glazer's Glaser, Rick at Glaser. It's at Real Rick Glaser 1. And I got about 3,600 followers on there. So you'll know the other ones don't have anywhere near as many followers. And follow me and I answer questions. My direct message is set up so you can ask me questions off the thing in case you're maybe embarrassed about the question because you don't want anybody jumping on you. But I'll always answer everything honestly and forthright. That's how I operate. Okay, absolutely. Guys?
Absolutely.
Well, I had a great time, great questions, and I appreciate being out here, and I look forward to being out here again. If you guys could send me a copy of this, when are you guys going to be – can you send me a copy?
We'll send it to you. I believe Mike has your number saved.
Yeah, we'll post it tonight, Rick. So I'll send you tonight.
You'll email it to me.
Yeah, we can email it to you.
Yeah, email or text you.
Yeah, text it to me. All right, that's the best. Text it to me. Okay.
Yeah, we have a big UK audience, so we get it out tonight because we hit the morning traffic.
And everybody in the UK, love being here tonight. You guys, I know you guys are fabulous boxing fans, and I love the enthusiasm you guys show for professional boxing. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your evening. Bye-bye.
We appreciate it. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
Rick Glaser, Mike. What a, he's definitely a great guest. He doesn't hold back. He doesn't hold back. And I think a lot of our listeners, regardless of what they think, I guess you can appreciate his, would you call it his forthrightness, regardless if you agree with him or not?
Yeah, at times, just like anything, even if you don't agree with somebody, if the passion and he puts behind his answers, you've got to listen whether you agree with them or not. Because I think at times, as fans, we get annoyed when journalists and anybody just sits on the fence. So I would rather they went one way or the other, regardless of whether I agree.
Right. Yeah, regardless. Yeah. And then like I mentioned just a couple minutes before we finish the show here, to Rick Glaser, that look, if Leonard Ellerbe, CEO of Mayweather Promotions, if he's open to it, we'd love to have him on too, to get his response to Rick Glaser's comments and statements and responses and all that. We'd love to get him on, to get him to respond to each other. You know, I know they're responding to each other on Twitter and all that, so people can just read their responses. But, you know, sometimes it's a little easier to just have a conversation with somebody so they can respond in full and not have to type everything and all that. So, you know, Leonard Ellerbe, open invitation if you'd like to come on the last round. Obviously, you know, we'll talk about Tank Davis and you know, other fighters within the Mayweather promotion stable, but you know, everybody deserves to respond to any type of critics, especially if it's getting a lot of attention. I know Leonard Ellerbe had, I believe he tweeted something about that the boxing Twitter world, boxing social media is just a small part of the boxing world. There's a big, you know, there's a big fan base outside of the social media of the sport of boxing that, you know, that doesn't even know anything about boxing Twitter and all that, which he is right. He's right about that. You know, there's another side to it. So it's not just boxing Twitter and boxing social media that's the end all be all. So there is another side, but like I said, you know, we're an open show here. And if you'd like to come on and respond to Rick Glaser, the invitation is out there. So Mike, typical fashion of our completed episode here, go ahead and let our fans and listeners know where they can find us and follow us.
We're at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. We'll be reviewing all of the fights we spoke about today. Joseph Parker against Derek Chisora, Carlos Gongora, Leon Richards. And I'm pretty sure there's actually no fights to preview because it'll be Christmas weekend.
It is. So we'll still try to get your episode out for your holiday week. You know, we try not to take too many weeks off during the year. So we try to keep your content moving consistently and forward. So for once again, for our guest of the week in Rick Glaser and my co-host, Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.